We're off to the races, powered by The Racing Biz, your independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. On the web at www.theracingbiz.com. And on the radio every Saturday morning, it's Off to the Races. Here's your host.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Off to the Races Radio. My name's Frank Vespi, and for the next hour or so, we're going to be talking thoroughbred racing and breeding in Maryland, around the Mid-Atlantic, and across the country. Thanks so much for spending a little bit of your Saturday morning with us here on Off to the Races Radio. We are powered by The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com, the independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. Got the website, theracingbiz.com. We're on the socials. Find us at The Racing Biz on the socials. Got the free mobile app. Lots of ways to keep up with racing and breeding news from around the Mid-Atlantic. Got a great show teed up today. We've got trainer Graham Motion going to be in here about 27 past the hour or so. Graham had a couple horses in the Laurel Stakes today. We're going to talk about that in a minute. He's also a finalist for Racing's Hall of Fame this year, which is kind of a cool honor, even whether he gets in this year or not. Looks like he's going to one of these days, and we'll talk with him about that. He also has a couple exciting three-year-olds in the barn, including a filly who looks to be headed to the Kentucky Oaks on Kentucky Derby Eve. So a lot of things to talk about with Graham. That's coming up, as I said, about 27 past the hour. In just a few minutes, maybe 5 or 6 minutes from now, Nick Hahn's going to stop in. He's going to give us his Triple Crown, his Kentucky Derby top five horses. Also, his Turf 10. What's a Turf 10, you say? Well, that's a good question. Nick will talk to us about it, but it's basically the top turf three-year-olds in the country. He's going to be following that as they wind through races at Churchill Downs on Derby Day, at Pimlico on Preakness Day, and eventually arriving, we hope, at Colonial Downs. Colonial Downs season coming up in July, and a couple of big stakes for three-year-olds on the agenda at Colonial. So Nick will be in to kind of catch us up there and give us something to look forward to as we near the summer. We're going to close the hour today with a visit from Ted Black. He's the Racing Biz Charlestown correspondent, going to help us handicap this evening's Confucius Say Stakes at Charlestown, which, kind of unusually for this time of year at CT, really has drawn sort of all the major horses you'd want to have if you follow West Virginia bred racing at CT. You got Maudib, you got Free Sailing, you got Jungle Beast, you got a bunch of horses, you got Coastal Mission. He's an interesting horse there who has not yet raced against CT, West Virginia Bred Stakes Company. So that should be pretty interesting. So we'll have Ted in towards the end of the hour. Also coming up, a visit from Liza Hendricks. She's the CEO of Wanamakers. Larry Johnson, he's the owner of Stallion True Valor, standing at Northview. Special thanks to friends of the show, like the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, Richard Hackerman, attorney at law, True Valor, the new Stallion standing at Northview, and Wanamakers online horse auction site. Thanks so much, guys. We do appreciate it. Now, I do want to address a situation in Maryland. No racing today at Laurel Park. No racing tomorrow at Laurel Park. Racing canceled both days. Also was canceled yesterday after the Maryland Racing Commission kind of weighed in and recommended to the stakeholders that racing take a hiatus this weekend. That came following situation on Thursday with a couple of serious equine injuries and one horse that was euthanized on the track. The Maryland Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association has requested or encouraged the Maryland Jockey Club, which operates the tracks, to shift racing to Pimlico effective immediately and reduce training at Laurel Park. Does not appear that the Maryland Jockey Club is all that amenable to those suggestions. So it's a situation that is developing. We'll be keeping an eye on it on The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. A couple articles up there already on that. Now, I had planned to have, and by the way, we're going to talk about that a little bit more with Graham Motion and how this affects horsemen in Maryland. I had planned to have John Piazzik in the handicap today's Laurel Stakes, but obviously that's a little bit of an exercise in futility, so we're not going to do that, at least not for today. Hopefully another chance down the road. But I also chatted with John about a panel coming up Monday at the Maryland Horse Library in Reisterstown. Here's a clip of that.
It's a panel on an aspect of Maryland racing not everyone is familiar with. Every year at Atlanta Hall Farm in Monken, owned by the Bosses, they host the Elkridge Hartford point-to-point races. This year's races took place on April 8th, and it was the 100th anniversary of those races. We'll have a panel discussion about their history this coming Monday, April 24th, hosted by Mariana Scaranti, currently the administrative director of the Manor Conservancy, a member of the Elkridge Hartford Race Committee, and an absolute repository of information when it comes to Elkridge Hartford. We also have Michael Finney, who owns the art and country clothing shop Yoitz and is the race caller for the Elkridge Hartford races. And you also hear him calling the Grand National later today. It's going to be a great time. And whether you know a lot about people chasing or are a complete novice, it's going to be a lot of cool stuff there. Come check it out at 321 Main Street in Reisterstown. And you can RSVP by going to marylandhorse.com/library and following the link.
Is it free for folks to show
yes,
up?
Yes, it is. Free admission.
Beautiful.
Let's turn our attention now to the Triple Crown Trail. In just a minute, going to have Nick Hahn coming in to join us. Nick, the host of Off to the Races Virginia, and also a longtime correspondent covering Virginia and Colonial Downs for The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. Nick going to visit us and give us his Derby top five horses and also his Turf 10 new feature coming up. You'll see more about that on The Racing Biz in weeks to come, but Nick will be talking about the top turf three-year-olds in the country, the Turf 10. So that's all coming up in a minute or two. In the meantime, we're also, after that, after Nick is on bottom of the hour, going to have Graham Motion, trainer of Animal Kingdom, the one-time Kentucky Derby winner and now a finalist for Hall of Fame consideration. He's going to be joining us, talk about what's going on in his barn these days. And later on, Ted Black's going to join us. We're going to talk about Charlestown a little bit. A lot of things going on here on Off to the Races Radio. So let's talk Triple Crown. Last week, First Mission, the very lightly raced horse from the Brad Cox barn, he got a half-length win in the Lexington Stakes. That is the last Kentucky Derby points race, but it does not carry enough points to get First Mission into the Kentucky Derby. Well, that leaves him maybe under consideration for the Grade 1 Preakness Stakes, that coming up the third Saturday in May right here in Baltimore at Pimlico Racecourse. Here's trainer Brad Cox talking about First Mission.
A lot of talent. We've liked him for a while now. He's always thought that, you know, he'd be a horse that could get around two turns or be the best at two turns. And maybe, you know, even further than this today, we certainly think he could get, you know, I don't know, mile and 3/16 maybe. We'll see.
A mile and 3/16, of course, the distance of the Grade 1 Preakness Stakes. That'd be a pretty good distance for one First Mission to get. Now, let's just talk quickly. About 2 weeks back was the last big spate of Kentucky Derby preps. Three races with 100 points each to the winner. That was the Florida Derby. That went to Forte by a length over Mage. Also, the Bluegrass Stakes at Keeneland, that went to Tappa Trice by a hard-fought neck over Verifying. And then finally, the Santa Anita Derby, that went to Practical Move by just a nose over the Japanese horse Mandarin Hero. So those last three big Derby preps, those races leave us with the following top five in the road to the Kentucky Derby. Forte with 190 points. Practical Move with 160. Angel of Empire, the Arkansas Derby winner, who's a Pennsylvania bred, with 154. Tappet Trice with 150. And Two Fills, the winner of the Jeff Ruby Stakes at Turfway Park with 123. So that's your top five in Derby points. Let's bring in Nick Hahn now. Nick is the host of Off to the Races Virginia, longtime Virginia correspondent for the Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com, to tell us his Derby top five and his Turf 10.
So, Nick, let's start with your Derby top five here. And I think your number one is the same as everybody else's, but I also think the margin from one to two is starting to shrink a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. Forte was pretty much a clear favorite horse that was bred by a Virginia breeder here in Virginia, actually foaled in Kentucky during COVID. Otherwise, might have been a Virginia bred. But, Amy Moore's horse, I think, has had the best. Really got a bit of a test last time around in the Florida Derby. And I think the real interesting thing with that horse is just what did that Florida Derby take out of him? It's going to be very important to have eyes on that horse on the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Oaks Day before the Derby and just see how that horse comes into the race. But I think spectacular as those big three races were, the Bluegrass, the Wood, the Santa Anita Derby, the field just got a lot closer. I know you're not supposed to talk about horse racing in violent terms, but those three races back some 2 weeks ago, they were a full, flat-out street fight. I mean, just great races going to the wire. And if anything was taken out of Forte in the Florida Derby with that big comeback, it may have been the same thing applies, at least in a level standpoint, with the three races here with Lord Watt Miles winning that Wood Memorial in a four horse finish at the wire. Tappet Trice really impressed me, and I'm going to leapfrog here to number two with Tappet Trice. We'll talk about him in a minute. And then Practical Move, that great battle with Mandarin Hero, who should be in the Derby and needs help to get in it in the Santa Anita Derby. But Tappet Trice really impressed me in the Toyota Bluegrass, coming out of the Tampa Bay Derby, going to a different track, and just looked big and physical in that Toyota Bluegrass. And I think Tappet Trice is a horse that could sustain. You know, the Derby is with the 20-horse field, it's a different type of race. It's hard to get a clean trip. I think Tappet Trice is a horse that could survive a bump or a little bit of hard luck and still be there at the wire. So that's who I have number two, Frank.
Now, Nick, let me ask you this. Forte is your number one after carries an impressive ledger into the Kentucky Derby. No love for the runner-up in that race, Mage, who was second in the Florida Derby, who does have the points to draw into the Kentucky Derby. No love for Mage?
Oh, boy. You bring up a great point there because you do try and look at horses that finish evenly and you try not to separate them too much. It's just something you naturally do as a handicapper. Maybe a little bit of resentment because I had Mage so many times during the Derby prep season and the horse just sort of let me down through that. So maybe there's a little bit of hidden slight that I have toward that horse, but you're right. You know, that is a horse that really, out of Good Magic, who was a horse I picked to go against Justify in the 2018 Triple Crown. Maybe like this horse a little bit more too. He may not make my top five, but he certainly should be in my top 10.
Yeah, he's a lightly raced sort. He's only run three times really taking nice steps forward as he does that. I think Mage is a little interesting. I think he's going to be maybe a little bit light on experience to win the Kentucky Derby, but it wouldn't shock me to see him nosing around some big races a little bit farther down the road. So Forte, Tappet Trice, Practical Move you have in third. He was the winner of the Santa Anita Derby. Let's look towards the bottom of your top five here, and we're going to look to the Louisiana Derby for your fourth horse.
Yeah, Kings Barnes. I think this is more of a historical perspective for me. I always liked the Louisiana Derby. I thought it was like one of the better prep races. I think American Pharoah won this race, but I know he was racing in Louisiana, but just it's the longest of the prep races. It's got the maybe the most similar racetrack to Churchill Downs. For a long time, there wasn't a whole lot of success with horses coming out of the Louisiana Derby to go to the Kentucky Derby, but that's changed. I think it's historically more significant. Kings Barnes did win it on the front end, which you really don't like to see really in the Kentucky Derby. You know, I think you're more comfortable with horses with stalkers versus horses that come off, you know, that try and wire the field. But, you know, recently, just pulling it up here quickly, Epicenter, Hot Rod Charlie, By My Standards, Gun Runner, you know, these are all horses, while they didn't win the Derby, they ran very well in it. And Gerben was a good horse that won the Louisiana Derby. So I think the horse with Pletcher having basically – I think it's three of the top eight in the Kentucky Derby. I think you know, that's a horse to really take a look at and you know, include in certainly in all of your exotics. I think that's a horse, whether on the front end or not, a horse that'll be there at the end.
Yeah, I do wonder if he's going to, you know, he got away pretty easy in the Louisiana Derby. That's not going to happen in the Kentucky Derby, most likely. So he'll certainly get a test. But at the same time, you really can't criticize the thing the horse has done. He's 3-for-3 in his young career. So lots of reason to think he's got plenty of upside as well. Let's look at the in your fifth spot. Nick Hahn is a horse with a little bit of Virginia connection from Colonial Downs last year.
Yeah, on the sister show, we'll have Jareth Loveberry on, and that's the jockey of Two Phils, who won twice at Colonial Downs. And Larry Rebelli is the trainer. Maybe a little bit of sentimental pick here with this horse, but it's just a horse that seems to be progressing. Got the big stakes win at Turfway, and I think this is a horse that will be a player as well. Yeah, there are a lot of horses. The way I like to bet the Derby is I like to take a stand. It's only 20 horse race we get to bet all year, and so I like to try and find one, two, maybe three. You know, it might be Forte, might be Tappet Trice, probably end up being big favorites. And then I like the spread. Try and get wide as you can in your exactas and your trifectas. And I think especially in your trifecta, you're going to, especially this year, I mean, if you look at the Derby point standings, there are a lot of good horses. And if we learned anything last year, excuse me, in the Kentucky Derby, it's like, don't ignore the bottom of the list, because Rich Strike really came out of literally nowhere to win the Derby last year. There are some good horses that maybe in a couple of days could end up in the Derby, like Mandarin Hero, like Cyclone Mischief. You know, these are really good horses. Disarm did get, you know, it's going to move up with the points he got in the Lexington. So he's in the field. But these are really, really good horses that, you know, may not make the field. So I think that's kind of the way I like to spread it. And I think Two Phils fits that. He's one that I do not want to draw a line through. I would draw a line through someone like Derma Soto Gaki before I drew a line through Two Phils. So I'm really excited about his opportunity. Good luck to Larry Rebelli and Jareth Loveberry when they enter the starting gate.
Yes, they've been friends of Off to the Races for a couple of years now, so obviously something to look for. And you know, notably, a couple of horses that have prepped on the synthetic at Turfway have won the Kentucky Derby, including Animal Kingdom and, more recently, last year, Rich Strike, who was third in the Jeff Ruby Stakes and then turned around and won the Kentucky Derby. All right, so Nick's top five: Forte, Tappet Trice, Practical Move, Kings Barnes, Two Phils. Nick, I want to turn quickly to another list that you are starting to maintain. Once again, your Turf 10, tell us, what is the Turf 10?
It's a listing that I came up with several years ago and haven't had the opportunity to bring it back. Back when Colonial Downs was in its first heyday, we'll call it, because they're really sort of in their second heyday now, they ran the Grand Slam of Grass. They had $1 million races. The Virginia Derby was $1 million. They had the Colonial Turf Cup. They went a mile and a quarter. They went a mile and 3/16 in those races. And you saw horses like English Channel, Geoponte. You know, these were champion horses, Kitten's Joy, that came through Colonial Downs, and it basically launched their careers. Ken Ramsey still says the best buyer, the best race that Kitten's Joy ever ran was in the Virginia Derby. And so in coming out of those races, I developed a Turf 10, which when Colonial Downs had their niche on the three-year-old turf division, everybody looked for Colonial to in hosting these races and moving these three-year-old turf horses forward. With this year, while the races aren't as long, a mile and an eighth, or I think it's a mile and a 16th for the Virginia Derby and a mile just for the Secretariat Stakes, which is the new race brought to Colonial Downs from Arlington. It's not a new race, but it's new to Colonial. They have $500,000 purses. So I thought it was sort of appropriate to bring the Turf 10 back. And it's just a way of tracking horses. They may not end up as being in the premier three-year-old turf race at Colonial, but I think a lot of these horses will be looking at Colonial because of the racing surface, because of the history of the three-year-old turf racing that's there, because of the great work that has been historically done through the track management to make people feel welcome at Colonial, that they may end up there. So that's kind of what the Turf 10 is. It's basically the best three-year-old turf horses in America. And I think we're not going to get all 10 of the top 10 at that time, but in July and August, or I should say August and September, but I think we're going to get a pretty good slice of them.
All right, so the Turf 10 is three-year-olds who have demonstrated the ability to go two turns on the turf and could potentially end up in at Colonial Downs for their big races. Some of them might end up at the Jimmy Murphy Stakes on the Preakness undercard next month. Quickly go through, introduce us to the names of your Turf 10, Nick.
Well, the biggest race by far so far has been the Transylvania Stakes, which was run opening day at Keeneland. And it's no real surprise my top three in that race will be Mostache, Nagaric, who was trained by Graham Motion, and Webslinger. It's $400,000 race, and I think those horses, along with other races that they have on their resume, come up with the top three. You mentioned the Jim Murphy that's coming up, the American Turf at Churchill Downs, which is run on Derby Day. That's going to be coming up. All these horses are at least nominated to this race. There are a couple of horses that and you'll see horses. This happens every year. They come off the dirt and they try the turf. So you'll see some horses like that. I also have Carl Spackler in this field. This is a horse that won by 8.5 lengths down at Gulfstream, breaking his maiden for Chad Brown. I think Jose Ortiz did a great job getting that win. When you win a race by that far, and in that case the race was only a mile, I think that's eye-catching. And I also have Behind Enemy Lines. This is a horse that raced overseas, came in the Gulfstream, and also ridden by Jose Ortiz to deliver a win at Gulfstream earlier this month, Jack Sisterson horse. So that's my top five. I also have Farbridge, who is an interesting horse. let me see here, has won two races. Guess who rode him? Jose Ortiz at Gulfstream Park.
Sensing a theme.
Yeah, there's this is a horse bred by English Channel. Todd Pletcher has this horse, a very prominent horse. You have Otago, who won the sophomore turf at Tampa. There's other horses like Johannes and Talk of the Nation, and then Candidate, who are also in that grouping. So very interesting. It's a little nebulous at this point. It'll get firmed up quickly as a three-year-old turf stakes is comes about, and horses sort of drift off the Triple Crown, and trainers take a look at what these horses might do on the turf. So it's really a list that'll start becoming more live here in the upcoming weeks, and you'll be able to find it, of course, on theracingbiz.com.
Okay, that's going to do it here. We are out of time on this segment. Once again, Nick's Derby Top 5, Forte, Tampa Trice, Practical Move, Kings Barnes, and Two Fills. Keep an eye on theracingbiz.com for Nick's Turf 10, the best three-year-old two-turn turf horses in the country. Nick Hahn, thanks so much.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me on, Frank.
That was Nick Hahn with his Derby Top 5 and his Turf 10. I want to turn our attention to a little bit of a different issue at the moment. As you may know, racing at Laurel Park was paused this weekend. They raced on Thursday, but there was an equine fatality. The Maryland Racing Commission stepped in and recommended that the track not race this weekend, which they have agreed to do. So no racing at Laurel today or tomorrow. That means five stakes that were to be run Saturday, today at Laurel, are not being run, at least not this week. Not sure what the disposition of those will ultimately be. Horsemen, Maryland's horsemen, are calling for work to be done on the track surface and for racing to move to Pimlico, effective more or less immediately, and to remain there through the Preakness meet with sort of limited training at Laurel until their track consultant agrees that the track is safe. The Maryland Jockey Club, which owns and operates the tracks, has countered that the track, essentially that the track is safe. They've called for racing to resume at Laurel on Thursday, April 27th. At the same time, they are calling for the Maryland Racing Commission and Maryland Horsemen to adopt a series of safety protocols that the company says made a big difference at Santa Anita Park, another track that the company owns that faced a spate of equine fatalities a couple of years back before doing a number of things, including improving the track surface and making a number of other changes. So what's going to happen next? Well, that remains to be seen, but this has a big impact on horsemen themselves and their equine charges because, you know, a lot of horsemen were aiming for races this weekend. They've got horses that are ready to run right now. If they have horses in stakes, they're not sure when those races are coming back. If they have horses in just regular overnight races, they're not sure if those races are going to be rescheduled or if they are, when they are. So wanted to talk to one of the horsemen who had some horses in the stakes today. Graham Motion had horses in both the Henry S. Clark and the Dahlia stakes, both of those slated to be on the turf and obviously going to have a big impact on his operation. We also wanted to touch base with him. He's got some exciting three-year-olds in the barn, and including one that's aiming at the Kentucky Oaks. And also, and this is pretty cool, Graham Motion is a finalist for consideration for the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame. Quite a career he has with more than 2,000 wins, Kentucky Derby triumph. He's got a couple of Eclipse Award winners that he's trained. So really a glittering career for him. So let's bring in Graham Motion now to help us make sense of some of what's going on at Laurel Park.
So Graham, we were talking off air. You had three horses pointed at the stakes at Laurel Park this weekend, at the Dahlia and the Henry S. Clark. Obviously, racing canceled given the situation with the racing strip there. How does that impact you? I mean, what do you do with these horses when the races that you were pointing at don't go?
Yeah, I mean, it is very frustrating. And to be honest, it's been a little bit of a familiar scene, unfortunately, with Laurel of late. you know, either with not getting races to fill or the cancellations. And I know everyone's trying to do the best they can and trying to do what's best for the horses, but it is frustrating. English Bee is a horse that, you know, we've pointed this for this race, the Henley Clark, for a while now. Since his last run, I've kind of had this race in mind. So he's very much been on a schedule to run this weekend. And right now, I don't know if the race will come back at Pimlico. I don't know. You know, I'm nominated to a race at Churchill next weekend, which could be an option. But things are very much up in the air. And, you know, now I have to adjust his schedule, and he needs to breeze this weekend. As do the two fillies that I had in the Dahlia. Now, those fillies are both coming off a break, off a layoff. So it's not quite as interruptive, perhaps, as it was going to be their first start this year. But, you know, we have been pointing to these races for a while.
Yeah, it's got to be hard to zig when you were expecting to zag. I want to touch briefly on one of the mare you had in the Dahlia, Soprin Basilia. Interesting horse here, bred in Ireland, was racing in Italy, just ran in the Premio Lidia Tessio, the Group 2 over there. First time in your barn. What can you tell us about this mare?
Yeah, I mean, most likely she's a filly that's going to want to go a little further. Her races in Europe have been over a mile and a quarter and even further than that. We thought the Dahlia was a really good spot to get her started, being local and being on a turf course that we're familiar with. But, you know, it's possible now that I'll get a couple more works into her and point her for a longer race, because I think that's most likely what she wants to do.
One maybe we'll keep an eye on. And Graham, I did want to talk with you about, you got a kind of a nice, it looks like, 3-year-old crop in the barn these days, including a horse named Affirmative Lady, a 3-year-old filly by Arrogate, who last time out won the Gulfstream Park Oaks. How is she doing, and where should we look for her next time?
Yeah, pretty exciting. So she's at Keeneland right now. She actually had a breeze at Keeneland this morning. She went 5/8 on the dirt track. So she'll have one more work, hopefully next Friday, which I hope to be there for, and then we have to ship over to Churchill on the following Monday. So it's exciting to be back in the mix, you know, at Churchill Downs for that weekend. I haven't had a runner in the Oaks since the year I won the Derby with Animal Kingdom. So, look, it's very exciting to be participating in those races, especially with what appears to be a live filly.
Yeah, she seems to be getting good just when you'd like her to, after a nice-looking win last time out in the Gulfstream Park Oaks. You also have another 3-year-old filly named Mission of Joy, who took the Florida Oaks on the turf at Tampa Bay Downs. That's another one you got to be pretty excited about. She's won 3 straight.
Yes, yeah, so she'll also run next week at Churchill on Oaks Day in the Edgewood, which is a Grade 2, I believe. Listen, she's stepped up. Every time we've run her, I honestly didn't realize she was going to be this kind of filly, but it's a really good family. It's a Samson Canadian family. And she just keeps improving. And physically, she's really changed this spring. She's turned into a lovely, strong filly, and I'm excited about her. She'll breeze on Tuesday at Keeneland, which will be her last breeze before the Edgewood.
Mission of Joy. And one other horse, one other sophomore I did want to touch base on is Nagarok. He's a colt by Lee, who really, I thought, ran a really good race last time out in the Transylvania, chasing the pace. And the winner turned in a really sharp fourth quarter. And your colt pretty much went with him, ended up beating a length and a really, really nice debut to the season. Where might we see him next time out?
So he could show up on Preakness Day in the James Murphy. That's a race, you know, it's a weekend we like to run. Being local, this is a cool colt. You know, he hasn't done much wrong since we bought him, and we threw a lot at him last year as a 2-year-old, including third in the Breeders' Cup. And actually, the horse that finished just behind him was the horse that beat us the other day at Keeneland. But no, he's an exciting colt. He's really grown up a lot, and hopefully we can have fun with him this year.
It's always you know, they say nobody ever died with an unraised 2-year-old in the barn, and I guess that's probably true if you have promising 3-year-olds as well, huh?
Definitely, definitely. I think pretty much you could say that about a nice horse in the barn.
Talking with trainer Graham Motion here. Graham had 3 in Laurel Stakes this weekend and now having to zig rather than zagging and find alternative spots for those. Graham, I went to your Twitter account a little bit earlier looking for some info and saw in your bio that you will not stick to horse racing. And I think it's a very interesting thing, and I wanted to touch base with you on that. You have been outspoken on certain political issues, gun control being one of them, and have been told repeatedly to stick to horse racing. Had those conversations myself, and there is a general sort of belief among a lot of people that as a horse trainer or a person who works in horse racing, you can talk about horse racing stuff, but you're not permitted to have other opinions. And I'm curious as you continue to express those opinions. I'm curious as to whether you have felt pressure to be silenced and sort of whether you feel like that's cost you anything and why you keep being so outspoken.
Look, I think it's a situation where I do have a voice. I have 30,000 people that for whatever reason want to follow me on Twitter. And I feel like I should take an advantage of that and use my voice to, you know, certainly I try to spread good information about horse racing, but I do feel very passionate about the gun control situation, and it just shocked me. I'm not an anti-gun person. I was raised on a farm shooting rabbits and did it from a very young age, but it just astonishes me in this country, and I find it very sad that we allow it to go on, and I have a voice, and I feel like I should use it, and it actually amuses me really that it becomes a political issue because I feel like it's more of a common sense issue, but I realize that it's something that people feel very passionate about. And, you know, rightly or wrongly, I'm going to use my voice since I have an opportunity.
Have you felt, do you feel as if that has cost you any owners?
I think it's possible. I think it also could have gained me some owners as well. So you take the good with the bad, but, you know, if somebody feels that they won't send me a horse because of my political views, then, you know, that's kind of sad. I also do have a Herringville Stables account, which we do stick to horse racing.
Interesting. Do you think you're being British? Does that give you maybe a different perspective on these issues than a lot of Americans have?
It's possible, but I mean, we were brought up in a country where, you know, you have to have a license for a gun and you lock it up when you're not using it. And that's what I was taught as a kid, and that's what we did. And I, you know, I'm very happy to go clay pigeon shooting. I just don't see why anyone needs to walk down the street with what's basically a machine gun.
No, it's our failure as a nation to deal with gun violence is a failure. It's a tremendous failure. It's kind of unbelievable.
For me, it's about my kids and the future and the world they're going to live in. And I just feel like, you know, we need to make a better life for them. And I don't think this is the right direction to be going in, to be allowing everyone to walk around with an unlicensed gun. I think it's very sad.
Talking with Graham Motion here. And Graham, one last thing I want to touch on as we let you get back to try to figure out what to do with your horses. You're a finalist for the Hall of Fame this year. That's a pretty exciting thing. Were you surprised? And what does this mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, it's very flattering, you know, to be in the group that I'm with, of which, you know, maybe one of us will be chosen. Look, it's very flattering. I never aspired to be in the Hall of Fame when I set out training. But I'm proud of what we've been able to do. And, you know, like anyone will tell you, I never would have got here without the help that I had, whether it was from my previous employers, Jonathan Shepherd and Bernie Bond, or the people that I work with now that have gotten me here. So it's very exciting, and it'll be, you know, if it ever happens or if it happens one day, it'll be a big honor, obviously.
I remember talking to King Leatherbury when he got in, and I said, well, are you excited? He said, well, it's nice, it's very nice, but it's not going to bring me any new owners. And it was a very, you know, King, it was very King. It was a very sort of practical response. On the other hand, you're young enough that it may bring you some owners. So it can't help from the business perspective either.
It really is very flattering, and I'm proud of, you know, the horses that we've had. I never imagined we'd have an Eclipse Award winner, you know, and we've had a couple, and I think that's very gratifying. And I hope we represent the sport well, and to be part of the Hall of Fame really would be a huge honor.
All right, Graham Motion, thank you so much for spending a few minutes with us to talk about what's going on in your barn. Exciting stuff. Look forward to seeing some of your horses in big races down the road a piece.
Thanks for having me.
Some exciting things going on in Graham Motion's barn, including one to really keep an eye on, Affirmative Lady, headed towards, as he just told us, the Grade 1 Kentucky Oaks on the Friday before Derby Day. So pretty exciting stuff. Want to switch gears just a little bit, but not too much, because I want to talk about a horse that was in Graham's barn when he was a runner, bringing a friend of the program here, Larry Johnson, going to join me momentarily on Off to the Races Radio, powered by the Racing Biz. Graham Motion trained True Valor when he was a racehorse, won a couple of races with him, placed in some important stakes, and True Valor now a stallion standing at Northview Stallion Stations. And wanted to bring in Larry and talk about his pedigree a little bit, because he's got a pretty interesting pedigree, particularly here in North America, where we don't see a lot of horses by Kodiak. So let's hear from Larry Johnson about True Valor.
One of the things that's really intriguing with True Valor is his breeding. It's breeding that's pretty unfamiliar to most Americans, since he is an Irish bred. And let's start with his sire, Kodiak. One website called him quite simply a stallion phenomenon. Why don't you tell us about Kodiak?
Yeah, thanks. Always good to be with you. You know, Kodiak is really one of those remarkable success stories where, you know, he started out at a very low fee, but as time has progressed, he's demonstrated kind of an incredible ability to get runners of high quality. You know, he himself is the son of Dane Hill, who is, you know, one of the best the world has ever seen. But Kodiak, if you look, and, you know, I know they start some of their racing in Europe at two-year-olds a little earlier than we do in this country, but he's been the leading sire in Europe of two-year-olds for six straight years. He's been demonstrating, I think, the durability. He's been the champion sire of winners in Europe for six straight years. Five of his sons have gone to stud, and I think each one of them has already sired a graded or group winner, including a couple of grade ones. So he's also establishing himself as a sire of sires. So I think you put the whole package together, and Kodiak, although it's perhaps a name not well known in this country, in terms of the European success that he and his sons have had, is a standout.
Now, True Valor is out of the acclamation mare Sutton Venny, and she's a half sister to a stakes winner herself, and a horse named Glorificamus, who is the dam of the stakes winning graded stakes place Fastnacloich. So pretty good, pretty good breeding top and bottom there.
Yeah, and I think that for people in this country, Stone Street, Barbara Banky's operation, clearly have an affinity for Kodiak. They campaigned Campanelle, who was a grade one winner both in Europe and here. And they are also the owners of True Valor's half, the No Name Never, filly named No K Never, who is already stakes play. So there's a lot to the pedigree, as you said, both top and bottom. And again, although it's, you know, largely European, they've had success on both sides of the Atlantic.
Tell us, what kind of horse is True Valor? What does he look like? What does he sort of present when you bring your horse to him?
He is a very well-balanced, very athletic horse. He's probably, I would say, 15-3. I think that's probably consistent with both Kodiak and the Dane Hills. I mean, typically the European horses don't tend to be as big as what we raise them in this country. He's not a small horse. And as I said, he is very well balanced, well proportioned, and very athletic. He's correct. And as we talked about the last time, you know, he raced for 5 or 6 years and was a stakes winner or placed in each of those years. So he's durable. He's consistent. He's versatile. And physically, he has all that he needs. So now it's just a question of whether he gets the right number of chances and ends up in the right hands.
Well, and that's the part you're going to hopefully be taking care of on the Stallion. And True Valor standing at Northview Stallions. He's, as Larry said, well-balanced, well-put-together, and by one of Europe's most exciting sires. Good stuff. A lot more to talk about on this, Larry. Come back next week, and we'll continue the conversation.
I look forward to it, Frank. And as you said, I am a big supporter, and I'm going to give him the best chance possible with my own. And if they show up at the sales rings, as I did with Street Magician, I'll also be a potential buyer. So I look forward to a successful stallion career for him.
Larry Johnson, owner of True Valor and good friend of this program, Off to the Races Radio, powered by The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. True Valor, new stallion standing at Northview Stallion Station. I want to give a shout out to a couple other friends of this program, including Richard Hackerman, attorney at law, Maryland Horse Breeders Association. And our next guest, that's going to be Liza Hendricks from Wanamaker's online auction site. Still to come in today's show, after Liza, going to have Ted Black handicapping the Confucius Say Stakes at Charlestown Races. That's coming up tonight. Ted's going to be on the final segment of this program from 10:50 or thereabouts to 11. So that's still a couple minutes away, but Liza Hendricks, the CEO of Wanamaker's, Wanamaker's new friend of the program, an online horse auction site holding monthly auctions. Let's hear from Liza a little bit more about Wanamaker's. Liza Hendricks, you guys at Wanamaker's have been at this for almost 3 years now, you were telling me offline. Tell us a little bit about what Wanamaker's is and how it works.
Yeah, thank you so much. Super exciting. So Wanamaker's is a fully online auction, and we have monthly online sales. So it makes it really accessible for everyone in the industry throughout the country to have consistent online sales. So we typically have entries open for about 3 weeks, and then the catalog will be released for 9 days to give buyers time to do their research, and then they can go look at the horses if they'd like to. And then bidding's typically on the final day, for the full day. So it's great to be able to offer consistent year-round sales to the market.
So just if your horse just suddenly gets good and you want to see if you can maximize your return on investment, you can take them right off to the sale and see what happens. And tell us about the April sale, which I think is just about going on right now.
Yeah. So we just released the catalog on Wednesday. It's an exciting sale. Horses of all ages, like our sales typically are. So we have a few yearlings in there, some racing broodmare prospects, mares in foal, and then a couple of stallion seasons as well. You know, as we're getting towards the later half of the breeding season, and actually have a couple PA bred horses in there. We have three horses being offered by Pewter Stable, Greg and Kate DeMassey. So two of those PA breds in there, and then they have a mare in foal to Yaupon as well. So Yaupon's been super popular. It's a great catalog. We have a 3-in-1 package in there, mare in foal to Country House with a Country House filly by her side. And then a couple stallion seasons as well. One of them is Flame Away, and he had a couple 2-year-olds breezing 9 and 4 at OBS, so excited to see how they sell this week. It's a great rounded catalog, and excited to be able to offer it next week.
9 and 4, that'll open some eyes with the Flame Aways. So Wanamaker's.com is the website. Folks can go check that out. Every month, horse sales online at wanamakers.com. You guys also have something new coming up Belmont weekend, right, Liza?
Yep, we're offering our second New York bred horses of racing age sale. So that's going to be Belmont week. They'll sell on June 8th, so the Thursday before the Belmont. We had our first New York bred horses of racing age sale last summer, and that was just before the Saratoga meet, and was very successful. We had one horse that sold and won during the meet, so that was exciting to see. But we had great feedback from buyers. They actually wanted to move it a little earlier this year so they could get some more time to prep for Saratoga. As you know, it's a great program there. So exciting to be able to offer that to buyers and sellers going into the Saratoga meet.
All right, lots of good stuff. April sale ongoing. You can check that out at wanamakers.com. And sales every month, plus a New York bred horses of racing age coming up Belmont week. Liza Hendricks, thanks so much for joining us.
Great, thank you so much.
Once again, the website is wanamakers.com. Wanamakers, a friend of Off to the Races Radio, powered by the Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. And we have reached our final segment of the day here. And Charlestown kicked off its stakes schedule last weekend. This weekend is round two of the stakes schedule at CT, and it's the $75,000 Confucius Say Stakes for three-year-olds and upstate breds going seven furlongs. That's two turns. This race turns out to be just about as good a race as you can expect for a state bred stake at Charlestown in the spring. All the major players are going to be at this race and competing in this race. And here to tell us about it and maybe handicap it a little bit for us, Ted Black, the Racing Biz correspondent for Charlestown.
Ted, let's start with this. Saturday, $75,000 Confucius Say Stakes going seven furlongs for West Virginia breds. This kind of feels like the days of like Russell Road and Lucy's Bob Boy hooking up with each other in some of those epic tussles 10 or so years ago.
Yeah, quite a good group on hand for the first stakes of the year for older state bred and older horses up there. Obviously the two-time defending horse of the year, Maudib, is in to make his seasonal debut. One of the horses that beat him last year, Free Sailing, champion three-year-old. West Virginia bred last year, who's already won a couple of races up at Mahoning Valley, come back as, you know, back in town. And of course, you know, Coastal Mission, who's been almost unbeatable up there this year for Runco, coming off a nice allowance score. And he had won two allowance races before they tried him in the Not for Love Stakes at Laurel. But, you know, he's in razor sharp form. And of course, pretty fitting that O'Sullivan Farm, who bred and owned Confucius Say, has four horses entered for the big stakes tomorrow night for their homebreds, three with Javier and one with Jamie Johnson. So just a loaded field, 10 obviously on tap, and then one on the AE. So, this race really couldn't have come up any deeper or any tougher for a first stake of the year.
No, I think that's right. And obviously, I got to ask you the critical question, who's going to win?
Tough choice. You know, obviously, very, very tough to pick against Maudib. I would say if this race was in August or September, I would probably pick him with a few races under his belt. But I'm going to go with Free Sailing. Actually beat Maudib the last time they raced at Charlestown, seven furlong allowance last year. Has since come back to win his first two starts this year against Open Company at Mahoning Valley. Just, you know, razor sharp form. And, you know, I think he's going to turn the tables on Maudib again this weekend. And like I said, if this was August or September stakes race and both horses were a little more seasoned equally, then I would probably side with Maudib. But for this race, I'm going to put Free Sailing on top. I think right now for seven furlongs for West Virginia bred, he's the best one out there.
So it sounds like, just to so I'm clear, it sounds like the key issue for you right now is that Free Sailing has two starts under his belt this year. Maudib has not yet raced. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's fair to say. Yeah, yeah. I think I got to give Freesail and the Regency Edge with the two wins at Mahoning Valley, you know, against open allowance companies, not running statebreds up there. And then to come down and run against statebreds where he has yet to get beat going seven furlongs. You know, his only loss at Charlestown was going long when they tried him in the Classic last fall. But going seven furlongs, he won a couple of stakes, and he beat Maldeeb in allowance race. So just off recency, I'm going to give the edge to Free Sailing this weekend. But like I said, if you call me in September or October when they meet again, I probably will side with Maldeeb.
Now, Maldeeb, let's touch on him for a moment. He is 12 for 14 in his career, had not lost until he finished a good second in the Grade 2 Charlestown Classic last August. Then, you know, his efforts after that weren't great. They were good. I mean, he's still really good, but they weren't great. He won the West Virginia Breeders' Classics by a half length at 1-2, then won the Funkhauser by 3/4 of a length at 2-5, and then was kind of an indifferent third behind Freesail and in an allowance race in December, beaten 5 lengths at 3-5. So he did sort of go off form a little bit at the end of last year. Do you think that is anything meaningful, Ted, or do you think it was just sort of the end of the campaign and he wasn't maybe an inch not as sharp as he had been?
No, you saw a little regression of him. You know, he had 3 straight mile-and-an-eighth races. Like you mentioned, the one he's second to Art Collector, who has since gone on to win another Grade 1. And then he come back and he won the Breeders' Classic as he was supposed to. And then he won the Funkhauser, you know, which used to be the Ahuevo. He won that as he was supposed to. So 2 years in a row, he's done the late double, as you might describe it, you know, with winning those two races going a mile and an eighth. And then I was a little surprised he brought him back for that 7 furlong allowance race toward the end of the year. You know, probably was just a little raced out by then last fall when he got beat by Freesailing and cutting back. And, you know, Freesailing, that's his specialty. You know, Maldeeb whipped him at a mile and an eighth, but at 7 furlongs, Freesailing beat him. So I'm not reading into it too much. I thought the work pattern for Maldeeb coming into this race looked pretty good. He had fired a bullet workout a couple Saturdays ago, you know, which suggests, you know, he's really on his toes again. So he's going to be a force to be reckoned with up there. But like I said, I think Freesailing just has a little bit of an edge on him for this meeting.
We're talking with the Racing Biz Charlestown correspondent Ted Black about Saturday's Confucius Say Stakes up at CT for West Virginia. Brett, it's really a good field set to gather for that. A horse that I like here a little bit, Ted, that I think might offer some value is the other Runco trained horse. That's Coastal Mission. He's really going 2 turns at CT. He's been pretty much killing his rivals, really dominating them. Most of his defeats have come at Laurel Park, facing maybe stiffer competition, and once at Charlestown, but that was going 4.5 when he just got beat by less than a length. So I feel like this is a horse that might offer a little bit value. 6-1 on the morning line, might be the controlling speed in here. I think he's a bit of an interesting play. What do you make of Coastal Mission?
No, certainly coming into it, dead perfect, like you mentioned. You know, rarely gets beat at Charlestown. Has never been beat going 2 turns at Charlestown. You know, his only loss, as you mentioned, was the 4.5 Coin Collector last year. You know, and a couple of decent efforts at Laurel when Jeff sent him over there for the stake races. But yeah, certainly at Charlestown, he's been a monster. You know, so I mean, he's going to make some noise in this race. Like you mentioned, probably the controlling speed early, and Freesailing and Maldeeb are going to have to come and get him. But yeah, no, he's in really good form right now. And full brother to Lewis Field, even though he's West Virginia bred, Lewis Field was Maryland bred, you know, but a full brother to Lewis Field. And, you know, on his day, he's shown a couple glimpses of being, you know, right in line with what his brother did. But yeah, just really good form right now as well. You know, at Charlestown is 3 for 3 there. this year and 5 for 6 overall at Charlestown, and the one beat was going 4.5. So, yeah, he's going to be a major player in there. I mean, this is just about as tough a stakes race as you can get. And, yeah, you can make a case probably for 4 or 5 of them, and certainly Coastal Mission at a decent price is one you can make a case for.
All right, Ted Black's going Free Sailing, Maude Deeb, Coastal Mission as his top three in Saturday's $75,000 Confucius Say at Charlestown Races. Ted, thanks for taking a couple minutes to talk us through the Confucius Say.
No, thanks for having me on, Frank, and looking forward to it.
That's going to do it here for us on this week's Off to the Races Radio, powered by The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. Thanks so much for spending a little bit of your Saturday with us. We appreciate it. As always, want to thank our show's co-founders, including the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, Richard Hack, Ackerman Attorney at Law, True Valor, the Stallion Standing at Northview, and Wanamaker's online auction site. Thanks to all our guests on this show. They included Liza Hendricks, Larry Johnson, trainer Graham Motion, Ted Black, John Piazzik, Nick Hahn. Lots going on today's show. You can keep up with racing and breeding all week long on The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. Tune in next week at 10 a.m. here on Baltimore Positive to hear the independent voice for Mid-Atlantic Racing and Breeding. My name is Frank Vespi. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll see you in the winner's circle.